Good morning, everyone. This morning we're going to summarize our series on awareness and omnipresence and conclude it with the summary. Our first talk was the publisher's desk claiming your omnipresence, subtitled, How to Separate Your Awareness from What You Are Aware Of and Enjoy a Part of Your Mind That Is Always Peaceful and All-Pervasive. And it has this nice opening paragraph. Omnipresence is defined as the state of being present everywhere at the same time. In a religious context, omnipresence is generally thought of as an attribute unique to God. God is present everywhere, whereas man is only present in the location of his physical body. Hindu thought differs from this perspective. Not only is God omnipresent, he has graciously shared that attribute with us. Omnipresence is found at the core of our soul. We can compare this to the internet, which was created by the U.S. Department of Defense for their use, but was ultimately given to the world for everyone to freely use. I've coined a word for the omnipresent network that is accessed by experiencing the core of the soul. I call it the internet. Then it goes through definition of Satchidananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, all-pervasive consciousness. Then it continues, in Hinduism, it is not enough to simply state that omnipresence resides at the core of our soul. This truth ultimately must be experienced by each of us. Very good point. Well, that's kind of a fun introduction, you know, a little bit of humor there. Metaphysical humor. But it does tie the two together quite nicely in the subtitle, Awareness and Omnipresence. How to separate your awareness from what you are aware of and enjoy a part of your mind that is always peaceful and all-pervasive. In the second talk, we took a look at awareness in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And it started with the idea. Our first concept is on yoga as a disunion. In general, usage, the Sanskrit word yoga means union. In Hindu philosophy, the union referred to is that of the individual self with the Supreme, also described as Atman with Brahman, and Jiva with Shiva. However, the process which the term yoga refers to in the Yoga Sutras is one of separating rather than joining. Merriam-Webster's definition of yoga captures this subtlety, which surprised me. Yoga, capitalized, a Hindu theistic philosophy, teaching the suppression of all activity of body, mind, and will in order that the self may realize its distinction from them and attain liberation. Yoga as a philosophy has the name Yoga Darshana. Gurudeva referred to it as classical yoga. The idea of a disunion is, in fact, the first concept presented in the classical yoga teachings of the Yoga Sutras. Starts out, now the exposition of yoga. Yoga is the restraint of mental activities. Then awareness abides in its essential nature. At other times, awareness takes on the form of the mental activities. First four verses. Awareness is the soul's ability to sense, see, or know, and to be conscious of this knowing. That's our lexicon definition, very nice definition. In the Yoga Sutras, awareness is known as Drashta, Drik, Chit, and Chit Shakti. The state referred to in verse 3, then awareness abides in its essential nature, is the result of awareness disuniting with the mental activities and remaining temporarily aware only of itself until thoughts again arise. This is the first way disunion takes place and, of course, is generally for an extremely short period. In classical yoga, a second way in which disunion takes place is in deep meditation, which is the idea of a sustained experience of pure awareness, different forms of samadhi. The third way disunion takes place is at the time of moksha, liberation from rebirth. The last verse in the Yoga Sutras is on this, the ultimate disunion. The involution of the gunas, which are now devoid of purpose for the purusha, is what is called kaivalya, or the establishment of the power of awareness in its essential nature. Kind of means the permanent establishment of the power of awareness in its essential nature. Power of awareness is chit shakti. Power of awareness. Then our third talk touched briefly on the idea of awareness and the practices of Saiva Siddhanta. So awareness comes up in the Yogapada and the Yanapada. So it starts here with Yogapada. There are a few different approaches to meditation in the Yogapada. In other words, that's trying to say that in Saiva Siddhanta, you have the four padas, Charya, Kriya, Yoga, and Jnana. Everybody agrees on Charya and Kriya, but when you get into Yoga, and particularly when you get into Jnana, there's lots of different approaches. So this is Gurudeva's approach to Yoga and to Jnana. It's not everybody's approach. Gurudeva's approach involves first understanding awareness as separate from consciousness. This is the same approach that is found in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. Gurudeva states, consciousness and awareness are the same when awareness is totally identified with and attached to that which it is aware of. To separate the two is the artful practice of yoga. So again, that's yoga as a disunion. Naturally, the Shumchev language is needed to accomplish this. Second perspective in Gurudeva's approach to meditation involves the concept of awareness aware only of itself, which in the Shumchev language is named kaif. In the Yogapada, the goal is to practice sustaining the experience of awareness aware only of itself for longer and longer periods. Then we get the Yanapada. So in the Yanapada, the practice is taken one step further in realizing the transcendental source of awareness. In the terminology of the tattva system, the transcendental source is called atattva. Other names for it are Parashiva and Nirguna Brahman. In the Shumchev language, realizing atattva is called im kaif, the absence of awareness aware of itself. Then there's a beautiful definition of atattva in our lexicon. Non-category, meaning it's not a tattva. Beyond existence, atattva, the negation of tattva, is used to describe the indescribable reality, the absolute, Parashiva, the self-God, which transcends all 36 categories, tattvas of manifestation. It is beyond time, form, and space, and yet in a mystery known only to the knower, the enlightened mystic, Parashakti, Nada, the first tattva, ever comes out of Parashiva. If it were not for Parashiva, nothing could be. Parashiva does not exist to the outer dimensions of cosmic consciousness, but without it, the mind itself would not exist. Then in our fifth talk, we got into the Shumchev concepts. You will be interested to know that there is not just one word in the Shum language for awareness, but rather there are many words that give precise descriptions to different perspectives on awareness. The first perspective Gurudeva describes is found in the Shum word Ni'if. Its perspective of awareness has a fourfold definition. These four aspects of the definition of Ni'if are helpful in grasping the full meaning. One, individual awareness or perception, which differs from vast consciousness. Two, the observation of individual awareness. Three, individual awareness distinguished from impersonal consciousness. And four, the perception of being aware. The related word is ni'if, which is ni'if when it is traveling. Just read the first part of that. Ni'imp, one, awareness flowing through the mind, being singularly aware of one area and then another. Two, ni'imp constantly changes its name to the name of the area it becomes conscious in while traveling, and is only called ni'imp when it is the thread of consciousness traveling or in between one of the names of awareness and another. So Gurudeva calls these states of awareness. So we're defining three states of awareness. Ni'if is the first state of awareness, and in our sixth talk we added a second state of awareness, which was i'if. Awareness flowing or traveling from one area of the higher mind to another in the fourth and fifth dimensions. Two, the tantra of observing awareness as it flows or travels in these two higher dimensions. Three, unless one is totally aware, one is not at all conscious of this happening. One may usually be only conscious of ni'imf and its flow, then in deep meditation of i'if and its flow. It is possible, however, to be simultaneously aware of i'if and ni'imf, each independent of the other and yet dependent upon each other. And then Gurudeva brings in the word nalif. Meditation, holding the vibration from one shumnam to another. Two, continuity between meditations. Three, after shumnam, or any type of meditation practice, pilgrimage or temple puja, a vibration fills one and remains with one long after. This vibration or current or CDC is called ni'if. Read that again. This vibration or current or CDC is called ni'if. Five, ni'if should be held from meditation to meditation or puja to puja. So then Gurudeva ties the two concepts together. When an Ache works on a Mamsani or Mambashum, the Nalif vibration is i'if, continuing within the areas and neighboring areas of the Mamsani or Mambashum, while ni'imf is totally aware in other areas. So both states of awareness are doing something different. When the Ache goes into the Mamsani or Mambashum, again ni'imf changes places with i'if, and a place of seeing deeper into related areas than did occur in the previous meditation. These i'if became conscious of during ni'if. Then in the seventh talk, we just brought in merging with Shiva ideas on the sub-superconscious mind and related that to the functioning of i'if. So Gurudeva's description: in the background, the superconscious is working through the subconscious, which we call the sub-superconscious, and the light of understanding is there, and you would say, I always knew it. So that's another way of describing the same process without using the state of awareness of i'if, relating it to sub-superconsciousness. Then the eighth talk introduced the third state of awareness, i'imf. One, awareness traveling in the sixth dimension, separate and apart from ni'imf or i'if. Two, it has the function of traveling and focusing. Three, i'imf is always experiencing, even when one is in other states of awareness. 4. The still small voice of intuition is an offshoot of E-Inf. 5. Deep intuition is first from E-Inf, giving the false feeling that someone is talking to us or a message is being given to us by some outside source. And that, of course, relates to Gurudeva's Merging with Shiva teachings on superconsciousness. E-Inf is sub-superconsciousness, and E-Inf is superconsciousness. How does one distinguish between intuition and usual thought-feeling processes? Desires come through feeling, warmth of emotion, as do thoughts, schemes, ways of manipulating the media forces for one's own personal benefit or that of a loved one. This is contrary to the power of intuition, which runs cold and is direct, like a bolt of lightning in the inner sky, or the subtle rainbow of an etheric aura which bypasses the processes of current thinking, giving answers before the question and solving problems before they have accrued. Sounds pretty good. Well, thank you very much for listening to our summary.